Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. In the third part of his Prolegomena to Any Future Metaphysics, Immanuel Kant has a short but important section titled General Remark on the Transcendental Ideas, and this is sort of a bridge between the main body of Part 3 and the conclusion, the determination of the bounds of pure reason that follows it. And it introduces some important topics that will be taken up a bit more in the next section. So Kant is going to begin this with a very interesting contrast, one that might be a little bit counterintuitive, but makes sense as we explore it. So he talks about our understanding, our investigation into nature or our experience, and he tells us two things. So the first is about specific objects. He says, the objects which are given us by experience are in many respects inconceivable, right? Now we have to be a little bit careful with that term. Literally, it is the right translation of unbegreiflich, unable to be conceptualized, we could say, or if you want to get closer to the root of it, unable to be grasped, to be comprehended. It doesn't mean that we don't have any notion of them whatsoever. It just means we can't get to the fullness of the explanation that we would want of them. And then he goes on and says, there's many questions which the law of nature leads us when carried beyond a certain point, though still conformably to the laws of nature, that admit of no answer. And here he gives an example which has to do with the physics of his time. The question as to why material objects attract one another. Why does gravity not only exist and work, but do so in the ways that we observe it to and can even generalize about. And so when we're thinking about nature or experience as such, these things remain murky to us and will remain so. And you might say, well, hey, Kant, we've made massive advances in science. Yes, true. But we still have questions and objects that we're not quite sure about. And as we've gone beyond what we might call straight out experience to all sorts of extrapolated experience, it's gotten confusing as well. And what's the difference between this and what we encounter when we go beyond nature or exceed all possible experience? When we land ourselves in the realm of mere ideas. He says that we cannot say that the object is inconceivable and that the nature of thing proposes to us insoluble problems. Now, you would think, well, if we can't even figure out nature and experience, how in the hell are we going to figure out things that don't have reference to that and are going beyond it that we're using reason to understand? Is this like a reflection of Platonism? You know, there's an intelligible world out there that's so much easier for us to grasp if we get away from this material world. Kant isn't doing that. But he is saying that, listen, if reason can raise problems for us, reason can also resolve those problems. Why? We're not then concerned with nature or with given objects at all, but with mere concepts, right? Griffa, that have their origin, their origination solely in our reason. They come from reason and with mere beings of thought. So all of the problems, he says, that arise from our concepts of them must be solved. Why? So here we get into something that shows a certain normativity to reason itself, something that we're going to come up with, you know, stronger formulation just a few paragraphs later. Reason can, he says, and must give a full account, Rechenschaft, of its procedure, of what it does. So reason is this higher faculty, higher than sensibility or the understanding, which apply and pertain to the experiential world, the phenomenal, right? reason goes beyond those, and reason has the capacity to actually look at itself. This is what critique in Kant's sense actually is. It's carried out not by the understanding, but by reason. So reason must give a full account of its own procedure. And here there's an interesting footnote. He references Herr Plotner and says, if reason be a criterion, no concept which is inconceivable to human reason can be possible. Incomprehensibility has place in what is actual only. Incomprehensibility arises from the insufficiency of the acquired ideas. And Kant says, it sounds paradoxical, but is otherwise not strange to say that in nature there's much that is incomprehensible. But if we go higher, everything becomes conceivable. Why? We're no longer concerned with this experiential realm where there's the temptation of thinking that we're actually getting to the things in themselves. We're not getting to the things in themselves. All we have are the phenomena that we experience, observe, can theorize about, and arrange in certain ways. So going on from this, he's going to say the psychological, cosmological, and theological ideas, these are nothing but pure concepts of reason. We've already seen that before, which cannot be given in any experience, right? You can't encounter limits to the universe or non-limits to the universe in experience. You can't experience the immortality of the soul. You can't experience the theological idea in any way. And so he says, the questions which reason asks us about them are put to us not by the objects, but by what he calls the mere maxims of our reason. And what is the point of this? He says that it is for the sake of, so there's a kind of teleology here, isn't there? For the sake of reason's own satisfaction, Selbstbefriedigung. Right? The satisfaction of itself. And this is kind of an interesting thing to note. It is reason being active in that sense, producing a satisfaction for itself, but it is also a satisfaction of itself about itself and its products, is it not? So that single term there is actually very productive ambiguity. So he's going to go on and say, all right, the questions that reason asks must be capable of satisfactory answers, which are provided by showing that their principles, which bring our use of the understanding, this is the point of them, into thorough, now he's got three terms here, thorough agreement, Einheitlichkeit, completeness, Vollständigkeit, something that we've encountered over and over and over again, right, in the discussion of where we get these ideas from, and synthetical unity, Einheit. So these are three aspects, we could say, of what it is that each of these ideas, the psychological, cosmological, or theological, brings to the table for us, or rather, how reason brings something for its own satisfaction to the table, right? And so he says they hold good of experience only, but of experience as a whole, right? Im Ganzen, not any one single experience. They are applied to the totality of all possible experience. And so he says, although an absolute whole of experience is impossible, the idea of a whole of cognition, according to principles in general, must impart to our knowledge a peculiar kind of unity, that of, now notice this term, that of a system. Very important here to note. Kant is not looking just for single principles. He's looking for an entire system that coheres within itself, that would have these attributes as well. Agreement, unity, we could say adequacy for Vollständigkeit, completeness, perfection, right? Being brought as far as it can possibly go. And then he says something else really interesting here. Without this system, it is nothing but piecework and cannot be used for its highest purpose, Zweck, end, goal, purpose. So we've already got a lot of teleological language going on in here, right? Reason has to give an account of its procedure. Reason is asking questions for the sake of reason's satisfaction. How does it find that? Well, through agreement, completeness, synthetical unity in a system which itself is going to lead us to understanding and perhaps being able to fulfill the highest purpose of reason. And Kant is going to clarify here that it is the system of all purposes. So not only do we have to have a system of these principles or pure ideas of reason, we need to have a system of purposes, all purposes. And he says, I'm not just referring here to the practical, but to the highest purpose of the speculative use of reason. Now, why make that distinction there? Well, within the realm of the practical use of reason, right, you've already got purposes built in there. It makes perfect sense to ask about purposes. Speculative reason or pure reason? Maybe not so much. So Kant wants to stress to us that it is both aspects of reason that are being involved here as having some sort of purpose, perhaps discernible, certainly thinkable, imaginable, beyond it. He also wants to clarify, as he so often does, we got to be careful here. The transcendental ideas express the peculiar application of reason as a principle of systematic unity and the use of the understanding. That's its legitimate use. But if we assume this unity of the mode of cognition to pertain to the object of cognition, what it is that we're actually learning about, studying about, making judgments about, he says, if we regard that which is merely regulative, regulativ in German, as constitutive, right? Two important ways of being regarded, being looked at. Regulative, this is just the way things have to go, and we're not making any, like, we could say existential claims. Constitutive, we are saying, okay, we understand how things work causally, what gives rise to what, right? And he says, if we persuade ourselves by means of these ideas, we can enlarge our cognition transcendently and beyond all possible experience, then if we do this, we suffer from a mere misunderstanding, Missverständnis, in our estimate of the proper application of our reason and its principles. And what else is going to happen? The dialectic of pure reason, right? We suffer from a dialectic which confuses the empirical use of reason and sets reason at variance with itself. If reason in its use and in its extent is not going to be in disharmony, it can't be falling into that dialectic, which is a possibility for us. But if we can understand the way we're supposed to look at and use reason, then we can avoid that. And that's what the Critique of Pure Reason was intended to do. And that's what the Prolegomena to Any Future Metaphysics is doing in relation to metaphysics. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.